few people, it was concluded, really understood. The Office of Fair Trading told it they had to stop calling it a 0% offer because so few people would understand that actually if they took that offer out, they'd probably end up spending quite a lot more. They'd probably end up being charged quite a lot more than 0%.
Because the important point of that was the debt that they carried over from previous credit cards, they had to pay that off first, and any money they spent on the card was being charged at interest.
So as soon as you... And you had to spend £50 a month.
That's right.
So you necessarily were going to run up some debt that was going
to
accrue.
Exactly, so they accrued interest straight away.
Yeah. So it was very misleading. And it is very difficult for people to understand. It's a very complex area. And the products are almost designed, a cynic would say, to encourage people not to read the small print, not to look at the details of the financial agreements they're entering into.
Yeah, we're talking about the Panorama programme, which is suspended like Beckham. It's on Sunday night. Usual time, 10?
Usual time, 10:15, just after the news, that's right.
So, thank you very much indeed.
Just on one note, the Queen Mother was £4 million in debt when she passed away, wasn't she?
Was she?
Yeah.
I don't think she went down Harrods
with a car.
She
had caviar floating every day, didn't she?
Well, it's certainly true that the royals famously never carry cash, do they?
This is why we have you here, Graham.
I have a mind of useless information.
Absolutely. Look, I must say that David Beckham, the ultimate big spender, is, as I said, and I repeat it, here in the studio in the form of a cardboard cutout. You can see him on the webcam, apparently, if you tune into our site. And you, yes, you, madam, can win him.
What about the gents?
Well, I just thought I'd, favour the...
Sexism.
It is a bit, yeah. But well thought out. You can text or email telling us why you deserve Bex. The best reason will win. And you don't win if you have the most debt. There's no connection between
the
two things. Yeah. Oh, I think I might be the judge.
You might be, yeah.
No, well, all my representative on earth, possibly. So, why do you deserve this cardboard cutout of the great David Beckham? And here's Vassos with the sport.
I know a lot of people who'd want that cardboard cutout, but
I do too.
I can enter, can I?
You can't, no. Sorry.
Do the sport, then it's going from...
If it was as easy as that, I would have been taking it home.
Thank you. It's going from bad to worse.
It's a sad conversation, isn't it?
Yes, I was thinking like a divorced couple.
Live news, live sport from the BBC.
This is Brian Hayes on 5 Live.
And my studio is populated by Graham Swain, journalist, etc., Priti Patel, who is in the PR biz, and cultural historian Christopher Cook. Dirty Dishes, we'll get to the newsmakers of the week in a moment. I just want to do this first. Dirty dishes by the sink or an unmade bed might not help sell your property in a hurry, but having the right piece of art on the wall just might. But the point is here, if you're going to use art, what should you buy? Edmund Hubbard is an art consultant and joins us now. Tell us, Edmund, first about why you think art is so important. Edmund Hubbard. Art consultant.
Maybe this is a kind of postmodernist statement, Brian, in which
I think
silence,
you're right.
Silence and absence are, of course, the condition of great postmodern art.
Yes, we'll have white noise next.
Absolutely.
That was it.
Are we allowed to comment on this story?
I'm now going to ask you to.
Would you call a space for that?
No, I tell you, there's a wonderful new business in this. Maybe this is what we're going to hear about, in which you have a modest investment in two or three quite nice pictures, not a lot, and you go around sort of lending them to people to sell
houses. That's right, exactly.
You know. Well, of course, you don't have to buy them. You're quite right.
You can hire them in.
Mm-hmm.
In a previous life, I owned an estate agent.
Oh, God.
Called Swain Estates, funnily enough. And when I used to go around to tell people about selling the houses, the one thing I did tell them to take off the wall was the Mona Lisa, because everybody at one point had the Mona Lisa on the wall, didn't
they? Get rid of the girl.
Yeah. And what in those days, it was the kitchen. The kitchen sold it. If the kitchen was nice and beautifully done, and the kitchen and the bathroom, they were the two selling points. But there's always something like that. And new developers, when they build houses, it's all about the fact that the kitchen's fitted nicely and they've got the washing machine and the fridge and everything in there. If they put a mini in the garage, it's sold.
I remember going to see a new housing development outside Milton Keynes, and the selling point was the fact they'd put fake birds' nests up in the eaves. And as we went round with the guy, the agent, he said, "Isn't it wonderful? They're nesting here already." My producer, who knew a little bit about birds as a twitcher, said, "Come on, those aren't even real nests. And those birds have moved for 30 years.
I mean, do you want to know about cavity wall nests? No, but has it got a nice washing machine? Has it got a waste disposal unit in the sink?
But, I mean, just taking it seriously, as we take everything, just for a moment, I do think it would work in a very subtle way if you had certain kinds of paintings, even if we're talking just prints. I'd have a Mark Rothko myself.
But I think prints are way better. Works better, but the fatal thing would be surely to have pictures that everybody knew. Your point about the Mona Lisa. Mm. I mean, if you had Dali's melting clocks or a Rembrandt self-portrait, this is going to be
It'll be gone and not that again.
It'll
sort of
be seen as tacky after a while.
The whole point is it's got to show that you've got an individual and interesting and quite good taste.
Class.
I mean, you're not going to buy a house that's with the Earl of Guernica by Picasso across.
But if you're buying a house you perceive has got class living in it, you like it.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll thank Edmund Hubbard for providing that pause for thought in our programme. And we shall move on, not just to the newsmakers first. I've just got a few of these text messages, people thinking that they might just run away with the cardboard cutout of David Beckham. This one's from Sean in South Shields, saying, I'll take the cutout to play for Sunderland on Saturday. It will fit in well with the other dummies we have. Then Charles in Cheltenham says, I deserve the David cutout, so if ever I meet him, I can stand it next to him and confuse him. That's a bit unfair.
Oh.
This one says, I deserve it because I am a long-suffering Grimsby fan and he would be better than any of our midfielders. Isn't it wonderful how fans of clubs are always the first to slag off their clubs and their players? It's very, very puzzling.
It's a British way. Set them up and knock them down.
Yeah. Maybe it comes with a kind of annual season, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, if you think you deserve the cardboard cutout that we have of David Beckham, if you would like him, and if you'd like to see him, he apparently is visible on the webcam, I am reliably informed.
It's pointed in the right direction.
Okay, so text message or email. Keep those coming in.
Hey, Brian, talking about the webcam, I got an email from someone after the last time I was on your press, and they loved the back of my bald head, which I thought was,
each to his own. Okay, newsmakers, then. David Beckham, it says here. David Beckham got an OBE this week, but despite his best efforts with hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of jewellery, his wife Posh stole the show. Her hat led to that Great Sun headline. I don't know whether you saw this. Can you pick up Sky Sports on that, Posh? I'm not sure. Did we like the hat? I think once you could actually see it, it was really quite terrific, wasn't it? They're pretty.
I don't think so, no.
You don't?
And I actually like Philip Tracy's hats, but I'm afraid this one did nothing for me, and I didn't think it looked that great, but that is a personal opinion.
That's all I asked.
Exactly.
I deserve all I get, Graham.
The hat is atrocious, but if it sets a trend that girls start wearing hats again, I'm all for it, because I love ladies wearing hats. At the moment, there's a little trend for wearing the old Midas flat hats, isn't there? And if it follows on from that, because women have forgotten the art of wearing hats, I think, except for Ascot.
Well, I think men have, too.
Oh, God help us.
And I think
men wearing baseball hats and never taking them off in restaurants are really driving me
nuts.
Well,
I don't mind too much, but I think it would be nice, sir, because if we went back to wearing Derbys and Trilbies.
And a good fedora, a good big broad-brimmed
fedora's fabulous,
it's wonderful.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But if you set the trend, whoopee.
But I think the hat is fantastic, actually. I think the problem is quite simply Victoria's hair. No, I think the hat is wonderful. It's the hair.
Wearer that's the problem.
I mean, what you basically want is a kind of bob for that kind of hat. You don't want, the Victoria long...
I just feel like I approach it with a watering can.
Anyway, we're taking the opportunity to turn this into investigative journalism.
From people at the beach in Brighton in the 1950s, they were wearing hats, three-piece suits, and smoking on the beach with kind of correspondent shoes. When did you last go to the beach?
Christopher, they did have their trouser legs rolled up normally.
No, not the people I was looking at didn't. Maybe the ones you knew
didn't.
The ones with the funny handshake.
I haven't heard that lovely term for years, Christopher. I'm indebted to you. Correspondent shoes.
Oh, fantastic. Real cads,
When we've come through with new versions, people find that attractive.
Can I just ask, my memory seems to serve that at one point we had grain stores overflowing with grain. What's happened with that situation?
The European grain mountains have really all but disappeared.
Really?
And there have been successive reforms of the common agricultural policy, and that in turn has led to a situation where all those mountains have been used up, and the price that we now pay for grain, which in turn is turned into the flour, is settled more by the prevailing world price of grain than what used to be the case.
David, interesting to talk to you, even if the implication is prices are getting up. Thanks a lot. That's David Walker from British Bakeries.
Some more messages concerning the David Beckham cardboard cut-up, people who are jostling, to possess young David. This is from James in London. I deserve the cutout because I need to sell my house. I'll hang him on the wall. Excellent, excellent.
Best so far, I think.
Audrey the Aussie says, I want to put Christmas lights on Bex to rival my mate's Homer Simpson's Santa Claus on his roof. This was the bravest political coup, or alternatively, the biggest publicity stunt of the week. Well, that was our other hero, President Bush, talking to ecstatic American troops after flying into Baghdad for Thanksgiving. Given the planes have been hit by missiles lately, I suppose it was a rather brave thing to do, was it?
They went in at night, which I suppose was the most sensible thing to do. Mm. You know, whatever you think about Bush, it does take your breath away, just the sheer planning and chutzpah. The sheer chutzpah of the whole thing. Mm. And I think the entry into that, in a side door, and that wonderful moment which is, you know, I have a message, but here's someone, the most senior man here to bring to, I just thought the whole thing had that nice sense of theatre that so much politics nowadays does.
Yeah, a bit like Jerry Springer, the opera.
Almost as good, but that's pushing it.
It's just reported by the BBC on Radio 5. Did you know that a British pilot spotted Air Force One going into Baghdad?
No, yes. Oh, wonderful.
Have you got on and said, I spotted it? No, you haven't, sir. No, you haven't. You really haven't seen Air Force One. It's the Gulfstream Air Force One. No, trust me, you have, haven't you? You haven't seen Air Force One. And that's a true story, a British pilot spotted him going in, you know.
That gave you a pretty PR, Patel.
I just thought it was a very well choreographed bit of PR, you know, that worked perfectly well during the period of Thanksgiving. And it's going to play out really well with the folks back home in the US at this particular time.
I've got this great image of Laura Bush and George Bush Sr. sitting there with the knife and the turkey, and no one knows George isn't turning up for dinner. Hi, Laura, I'm in Baghdad. Sorry, honey, I'll be
which
late.
Which is on the telly.
I'd love to know, and I suppose one day we will know, the logistics of that. Because, you know, it must have been extremely difficult.
They appear to be rolling out already. The fact that there were two planes at Andrews Air Force Base, in which the Air Force One flew in from Texas, where they are at the ranch, one was rolled in the... So it's going to make a great novel, isn't it?
Did you read about that? They got held up because they left in an unmarked black van, and normally they go to big paraphernalia, but this is an unmarked black van. They got stuck in a traffic jam because no one knew George Bush was in the van.
I think it'll be a good TV special. Now, Christine Hamilton escaped a speeding offence this week after she argued in court that she didn't know whether she or her husband, Neil, was actually driving when the cameras caught their car. This is her story. Well, I suppose, you know, there is a funny kind of loophole, isn't there? Although it would seem to me that when you see that flash, it does flash, doesn't it, when they take a picture? Yeah, that... you might just kind of make a note, really.
And, of course, that loophole has strategically been found by the Hamiltons.
Absolutely. How curious is the Hamiltons again, I think.
But the other thing is my colleague on my right here, Colin Harrison, who's going to give us the sports news in just a moment, exclusively revealed to me that she seemed to remember absolutely every detail except that one.
Two things will cure that. One is the new digital speed cameras, when they come out, they actually photograph your faces. So beware if you've got your mistress in your car and not your wife, because you're in big bother, because they actually send you a photograph showing who's driving the car with the new digital cameras.
I suppose you have to wonder, too, why bother? Just pay the fine, for goodness sake.
Oh, I think that would be asking too much of Christine Hamilton.
But you know the other thing that's going on? Rich businessmen that get nicked for speeding, they pay students to say they were driving, and they get the 3 points on their licence, so they don't have a car anyway.
Well, I mean, we did talk last week about a much more serious case of two men. There are a couple, though, of here, of reasons why various people should have the cardboard cutout, because that's what we're offering. It is a prize. It is a full-length cardboard cutout of David Beckham with panorama across his shirt. That's because there is a program which is going out on Sunday night, which is called Spend It Like Beckham, and is about debt and credit cards and so on. You can email or text if you think you deserve it most. This one is, I deserve the cardboard cutout because I am worth it. Signed, David Ginola. Ian of Essex says, I need a Bex cutout as I need something to hang my wet tea towels on.
He'll go limp, it's cardboard.
Yeah, this one says, we deserve the Beckham cutout, so our Sunday team has something to aim at. Kate in Somerset says, I deserve the David Beckham cutout because we were separated at birth. Both born in Whipps Cross Hospital in Leytonstone, and we meant to be together. I'll leave the rest of the moment and just reintroduce Graham Swain, who is here. He's a journalist and used to be an estate agent. Priti Patel is a PR consultant, used to work for William Hague. And Christopher Cook is a cultural historian and used to go to school, apparently. Well, no, we know what that is, that song, Rawhide. We know it was the theme of a television show.
And kicked off Clint Eastwood.
Do we know who that singer was?
Oh,
I know. I know. I know.
Tell us, tell us.
Frankie Lane.
Frankie Lane.
Oh, of course.
Every cowboy film in history uses the same formula. Take a beautiful blue sky, add acres of rolling fields, mix in an attractive young man on a horse. It is a model we've seen again this week with new pictures of Prince Harry, looking like the Marlboro Man on his gap year. Now, I thought that, wasn't there a fuss recently that they didn't want any media attention? Mm-hmm. And here he is, with his Auntie Annie, on a cattle station in Oz, in all the newspapers.
This is surely one of the agreed and arranged sessions, isn't it?
I suppose.
There's some kind of diary in which, you know, he's off-season and on-season as far as photography.
Well, a cynic would say there's all this debacle going on about Prince Charles at the moment, so good distraction is very useful at the moment, isn't it?
Mm. When you look at it, Pretty, what do you think the palace spinners want us to think or believe or see Harry as?
I think there are a couple of factors at play here. I mean, there is, as Christopher mentioned, the overall thing about, you know, prearranged photo calls, etc., while Harry's out there. But I think it's really sort of him out there, you know, not just enjoying himself, which he's been doing in Sydney, watching the rugby, but also benefiting, you know, getting some other beneficial experiences while he's out there in Australia right now as well. Because, of course, this whole thing while he was out in the outback was going to be closed to the cameras. So they've opened that up. They're showing him sort of like in the outback having a different experiences and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so what is he, Mr. Action Man or something?
Well, man of the people.
There aren't many people there involved, though.
No, and the people that are quite well-off people.
That's not the point, Brian. He's a man of the people. He's out there doing what other people do, in theory.
Well, he's had the weekends off, as you say, to watch the rugby, where most of his time seems to be in the company of another older woman, Clive Woodward's wife. Very good, isn't it, that he's being looked after so well.
Weren't they trying to set up a thing going on with Clive Woodward's daughter? Well, they're suggesting there's a thing going on there as well, and the papers like that one.
We're not here to gossip.
They did like that, didn't they?
When they won.
Moving to a higher plane. Brian actually said, "What by five? Why do they all go to Australia? I mean, after all, Prince Charles set the fashion when he went to Geelong.
Yeah.
Why don't they go to Canada or to New Zealand?
Have you ever been to Canada?
Yes, I have many happy memories.
Well, I think, for lack of interest, Canada has been cancelled.
Have you been to Australia?
Yes, I have.
So, you can answer the question.
Well, I would have gone to New Zealand, I think.
You forget Brian comes from Australia. He's sticking up for his homeland.
That's what I'm asking the question.
I want him to tell us what it is. What is it? I mean, here's the country that is longing to be a republic, we're told. They can't wait to get rid of the Queen as the head of state. And yet, you know, this seems to be a kind of magnet for members of the royal family.
All that may be true, but rather like America, there's a kind of romantic idea people have about Australia, and that way of life is one of the things.
It's the current buzz country to go to. That's really the point.
And for years, of course, nobody went there.
But this goes back to when Prince Charles was dispatched there to be made a man of out in the outback at some appalling school.
And look at the result.
I couldn't possibly comment.
The poet, Benjamin Zephaniah, revealed just a couple of days ago that he had turned down an OBE.
Well, I think the whole OBE thing and MBE thing has been a bit diluted recently. I mean, David Beckham's got something. But what has he actually really done? If you really put hand on heart, so what has he really done? Yes, he got England to the World Cup and by getting them scoring a free kick. But seriously, what has he done in life, really, at the moment?
But you can ask that of a very high percentage
It's almost like our equivalent of sending the Oscars back that Marlon Brando and a few other people have done over in America, isn't it? It's like our version of that now. It's become at that level, I think.
It's really ironic. And I actually, personally, I think Blair was probably just, you know, dare I say it, trying to jump on a bit of a populist bandwagon, thinking, oh yeah, this guy's well known, etc., you know, a lot of good credible work, etc., associated with him, so let's go and give him a go.
I think, as he said, they should have checked a bit the things that I've been saying.
But the general premise of an OBE is a specific contribution, isn't it? That's the general premise.
No, I don't think it is at all. I think they're totally spurious, all of them.
That's supposedly what it's for.
Well, no, but I mean, the reality is, if you look through the list, you know, for services to politics, for example, or whatever, they've got the wrong phrase. You know, I mean, this is basically having Mr. Buggins on the local council for 10 years.
Well, I think we have a kind of a consensus here, I think, that he probably did the right thing, and it's a pity that a few other people...
I should just point out, I've got the Evening Standard in front of me, and Trevor Phillips, the chairman of the Commission of Racial Equality, disagrees vehemently with him for doing it.
Well, he, to be fair to Trevor Phillips,
he's associated, of course, sure. with working for the Prince of Wales, mm. and I suppose he feels that that's the line he should take. We respect him as well. Oh, he's so generous. It's coming up to 12:15. There we are. There are some of the newsmakers of the past week. Now, let's talk about Friends, not the TV series. The average Briton makes 396 friends during the lifetime, but loses 363 of them. Again, now some die, others you fall out with, many move away, or you simply drift apart.
Hi, Janet, it's Graham here. Isn't the problem here the definition of what is a friend and what is an acquaintance? Because the term friend now has got a bit too generic, in my opinion. I mean, you can probably say friends, in my opinion, the definition would be, let's say you get locked up in a jail in South America and they've thrown away the key. Who would you ring that you know would move heaven and earth to get you back?
Right, I agree.
Would that be a fairer sort of definition?
Well, I think that most people can distinguish between an acquaintance and a friend. I think the hard thing is when you start talking about what level of intimacy of the friendship. And people will call someone a friend who really is an acquaintance.
That's my point.
Because it sounds nicer to say, I had 10 friends over for coffee, or I had a party and there were 50 of my closest friends.
Yes, I get invited to those parties occasionally.
But I wonder also, if taking Graham's point about acquaintance and friendship, whether, in a sense, acquaintances are actually almost quite a carefully constructed relationship of trade-off, in which you expect an acquaintance to ask things from you, and you expect to give acquaintances things. Friends, there is still a kind of sense of altruism, a sense of generosity. You would do anything for them. There isn't a price paid upon it.
It's more, not exactly, but close to being unconditional.
Yeah. I think that's exactly the word.
Friends play to your positives. They know your weaknesses, but they don't play on those. They play to your positives because they take you for the package.
Yes,
acquaintances, might see on a daily basis. Friends you might not see for a year.
Yeah, we always defend our friends. Dr. Jan Yeager, thank you very much for talking to us, sociologist and expert in the subject. So I did want to talk about what is it that we expect of people who are called our friends. Now, your example was a good starting point. Just how far do you go? You know, something dreadful happens in their life. If they phone you, and it's not just because you might be able to do something, but it's because they feel they can trust you, I think. Absolutely. And trust is very important, isn't it, with friends?
I think it's exactly that. Trust, solidarity, understanding, you know, sense of confidence, all that kind of stuff. And also that you're not going to belittle them or sort of undermine them in any particular way.
I think if I have a friend and they say something to me that they say, I don't want this to go any further, this is just between you and me, then I respect that. Absolutely.
And with that surely comes a sense that you are unshocked by your friends. And
it's unconditional.
You expect them to be unshocked too, that you really can tell them anything, and that you also know that in that awful moment that happens with one's friends, particularly as you get older, where there may be a choice, say, between your friend and their partner, that your friend knows, and that's the act of friendship, you will go with them. Whatever regrets you may have, you're with them.
I just want to ask our listeners, too, to comment on this. We are not talking about acquaintances or those other people you might call friends but you know aren't.
I think the saying, a friend in need is a friend indeed, is very valid.
Yeah. So call us if you had something to say about that.
I think there's also something else which I was thinking about today, which is that many of the people who become one's friends are people that you fancied. People that you fancied but have been unable to do anything about.
But what about the people you've had a relationship with?
Oh, I think that's a real test, to have a friendship with someone you've had
Well, I know somebody who had relationships with about, that I knew about, something like 6 women, and he remained friends with them, close friends with
them. That's heroic.
Until the day he died.
I think there's one other word that needs to come in here. With friends, you've got respect.
Yes, yep. Somebody's got to respect you, Graham.
Thank you. I thought you did, Brian, but I still like your headphones.
And disrespect, too. I mean, what a friend can tell you are things that you don't want to hear often.
Yes, you can take it from your friend that you won't take from anyone else. That's a good point as well.
Okay, we do want to hear from you about that. Any views that you have, any definitions, if you like, of best friends. A couple more of the text messages from people who do want to possess our cardboard cutout of David Beckham. This one says, I deserve it because I am David Beckham, and this hotel doesn't have a full-length mirror.
But he is a bit limp.
And didn't see him, we were gutted. I will love him, look after him forever. So he's got an anonymous.
It's a bit sad.
It is a bit, isn't it? Yes.
on 909 and 693.
Brian Hayes on 5 Live.
Long live 5 Live. Thank you very much. Graham Swain is here, a journalist, Priti Patel, PR consultant, Christopher Cook, cultural historian, and, it's Dot Nadebeo. Suddenly materialised before my very eyes.
Absolutely.
Wearing a very fashionable hat.
Fantastic, yes.
You had that on last time I was here.
Oh, sorry.
Have you taken it since?
No, not at all. I'll try and get another one eventually.
But you're on the radio at 1 o'clock.
Yes, I am. And
now, let's go back to Christine Williamson, who is with us, head of the campaign group Silicon Support UK. And I don't know whether you know this, but about 4,000 women a year have breast implants in Britain, more than three-quarters of them for cosmetic reasons. Let's just go back to this business of an insurance policy, £500 worth, and I don't know how you value that, but whether it is worthwhile, and whether there will be, do you think, ever an insurance policy that would satisfy the concerns you have?
Well, the way I look at it is that we insure our cars, we don't expect to have an accident, we insure our houses, we don't expect to have a fire, but if we have breast implants, we do know they're going to break. If I had a big breast like my friend's, he wouldn't go out with other women, and he paid for the operation.
And you believe that?
Well, I was young.
Mm. Self-esteem, Christine, wasn't it? It's your self-esteem at the time.
Yes, I mean, I was in my early 20s, sure. and I had two children, and I wanted to save my marriage.
Couple of things,
I blamed
Christine.
Myself. Of course, now I realise it was very silly, because he still went sure. out with other women.
Haven't they come up with other options other than silicone now? Am I asking a very broad question that can't be answered in a couple of seconds?
Oh, wow.
I mean, okay. I understand it, though. They've come up with quite a different few variations now, haven't they?
Well, you
natural,
can
natural products in them now and things like that. So if it does absorb into the system,
oh,
it's
oh,
not
yes. I mean, we did have... We had the soya.
Soya, that's
which
what
is oil. I mean, would you really put a fish in your breast?
You think the alternatives are not necessarily
but
better?
They're not available now because they were found to be causing cancer and other things, and they took them off the market.
Right.
They had to take them off.
And
they told you not to have babies and you mustn't breastfeed. And there was another one with a polystyrene cover, and they took that off the market because it was causing cancer.
And the other thing that occurs to me is we've all had experience with insurance policies. How is this enforceable if we do have a policy that along the lines you want? Because there will be so many exemptions and so many contentious grey areas.
No, there shouldn't be. It must cover. The main problem is rupture and badly leaking implants.
But won't they exempt if it's, you know, could be proved to be it's human error or something like that on the surgeon's part? They're exempt themselves and so on and so forth.
But we've got to protect the women. If they're going to have them, and they will have them, they will take all the risks because they're young and impressionable and they see all the magazines and they see the girls on the television. They're still going to have them. And they will take the risk. So we have to protect them. We get a proper insurance. And which they will pay for.
What's the percentage of problems with this? What, is there a percentage?
Well, every
single
they don't.
1 in 3, 1 in 10, 1 in.
No, they all will rupture.
Apparently, it's between 5 and 10%, which
they reckon
was alluded to by
7 years.
Kelvin earlier.
You know, possibly 7 years they will last.
But it's about risk. It's about risk.
It is, and that's insurance companies work on that basis. I think it is going to be extremely difficult. But good luck and thank you very much indeed, Christine Williamson, who's head of the campaign group Silicon Support UK. Okay, it's 10 to 1. We mentioned this earlier. Tony Blair and Michael Howard may be great rivals in the Commons at the moment, but they're both united in the search for new political gimmicks. Now, are these serious proposals from politicians with genuine intentions, or are they, this is where I sneer, cheap gimmicks to get publicity? Will the public believe in the big conversation or dismiss the idea with just two words of dismissal, and you know what they are? The Tories have admitted that they are not making any promises about cutting taxes, so is there any real benefit to come from this proposal? Now, the big conversation's kind of hard to get a grip on because it's, like many of the things in politics, a concept. Mm. That may, you know, it may bear some kind of fruit or not. But the other one, this tax bank holiday, and I understand that the date was something like late May. It's now gone into early June. Well, we've already got bank holidays, for goodness sake, Ben, haven't we? We've had Easter, we've had May Day, and we have the spring bank holiday. How can you squeeze another one in? Just being practical.
Well, I think it's a load of rollocks. I said rollocks, because... They're all vote catchers. I mean, if they want to do that, why don't
well,
they...
Well, there's nothing wrong with vote catchers
well,
if you're
okay,
a politician.
I've got a proposal for them. Why don't they stop putting the clocks back in England when we get to the winter time to keep the Scottish farmers happy?
Why can't that got to do with anything?
Well, they can put that forward and say, that's a good proposal, and we'll all vote for that. Because it's dark.
The Scottish farmers won't.
Yeah, but they're out in the fields 24 hours with searchlights anyway these days. So what's that got to do with anything?
I think bank holidays are popular full stop. So on that basis, I would go...
We have less bank holidays than any of the other European countries.
But Brown has the point. If we're talking about bank holidays, what we want is a bank holiday in October and November. The long journey from August to Christmas, the Christmas is such a long one without a bank holiday.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I think around the Tax Freedom Day, there is a much bigger issue, of course, because yes. I think the reason for doing this from the Conservative Party's point of view is actually about broadening the debate about sort of tax, the taxes we pay, the level of taxation and all those kind of issues. And they're big issues.
This would come happily, more happily, from a party that would actually tell us currently what it intends to do about taxation. I mean, it hasn't till hitherto spoken with two tongues. We've been told they're going to cut taxes because they are the party that always cuts taxes, and we've been told by Michael Howard himself when he was Shadow Chancellor there could be no promise.
What is this thing about cutting taxes? I've just been reading in the paper about one bus lane camera in Barnet that has earned £1 million. If that's not a stealth tax, I don't know what is.
I don't think it's just about cutting taxes, and I think that's slightly misconstrued as well. I think from the Conservative Party's point of view, this is about a broader debate, particularly as we've seen a lot of stealth taxes under the Labour government. Mm. We've also seen taxes rise, and this is also about the bigger battle between public money and public services as well.
But it is just a gimmick, though.
But talking about tax bank holidays, or indeed the big conversation, which is a way of actually hiding the fact that the Labour Party have no intention of discussing, you know, for example, top-up fees.
Yeah, sure, no, a
whole range
away
of issues, and indeed what they intend to do with certain hospitals.
It's a smokescreen.
Is not to actually engage them in debate, I think, and that's the problem.
So they're both gimmicks.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's the judgment of the panel, and thank you very much.
I'll be on a panel in my life.
We all agree.
You might start getting reasonable, so I'll stop at that point. And we do have some things we found in the Saturday morning papers that may be of interest to a waiting nation. Oh, by the way, are we going to announce the prize of the Beckham and et cetera, Mr. Producer? Sorry? Oh, I've got to say, have I?
Okay. You said you were going to.
Yes, you announced we all volunteered, Brian.
Okay. I take your point. Well, would you talk about what's in the newspapers while I have a look at
ladies
first?
Sure. Well, I'm going to start off with a tabloid because I like this guy a lot. And this is about telecomic Peter Kay. This story is coming from The Sun, who has landed a role in Coronation Street, which is something that I don't watch, but I do like Peter Kay, as a bungling Romeo. He's great. He really is.
While there's this pause in the proceedings, the winner...
you need a drum roll. You need drama.
Yeah, well... Thank you. The winner was the person who said the following. I deserve the David Beckham cutout because we were separated at birth.
Bravo!
Both born in Whipps Cross Hospital in Leytonstone, and we meant to be together. And that's Kate in Somerset. So, Kate, I don't know what we're going to do about this, but I'll leave that to my production team.
Have you ever been to Whipps Cross Hospital? If they found the way out of there, they did well.
Anyway, it is the full length, slightly larger than life, cardboard cutout of David Beckham, the hero of Panorama on Sunday night.
And you've got to collect it.
Kate was still up. She tell us what she's going to do with it in her house in Somerset.
Actually, Brian, how is she going to get it? Is it going to be posted, or is she going to pick it up on public transport?
The BBC will take care of that.
Oh.
It'll be saying to the producer, yes. Okay, continue if you've got something from the...
I've got to do this. After stuffing the Aussies at rugby the other weekend, I love this. They've put their foot in it again.
England only just won.
But we won. The winning is all important. They've just had the Davis Cup with Spain in Melbourne, and they're playing the national anthems. They played the national anthem from the 1930s before the Spanish Civil War. And totally insulted everybody.
I love that.
I do love that. Only the Aussies could do that, couldn't they? Be fair,
I don't think only.
Or maybe America could do it as well.
There have been other examples, I think. I've got two terribly serious stories. One of which does indeed give pause to thought. There's a picture, it's from the Daily Express, of a boy who is holding up against his cheek what looks for all the world like a rather nasty little gum. And the story is that he's been expelled from school. Brian Atherton, 12, threatened two members of staff with a BB pistol, which apparently fires ball bearings by means of a spring mechanism. His parents are up in arms at the fact he's been expelled from school. And his father said the gun actually belongs to another lad. lad who lives out of the area, and Brian was taking it back to his grandmother's after school to get it back to him. I'm not happy about the way the school has handled this. What I find actually disturbing is the photograph that goes with this article, where clearly the Express has encouraged the little boy to pose with his gun up against his face.
His butter wouldn't melt in his mouth.
Absolutely. Though, and what it seems to me, if we talk about copycatting, and then we talk about, you know, speaking with two tongues, this is exactly the kind of story that does that, I think.
And there's a box in the centre. Should a gun-toting 12-year-old be expelled? Yes, and the phone number. No, and a phone number. And then there are text addresses as well.
Is it at premium rates, Brian?
I don't know. 0901? What kind of number would that be? Oh, yes. Calls cost 10 pence. It is a premium rate. 10 pence from a BT landline. Lines close at midnight. And, you know, all of that, that stuff. Yes, I'm not quite sure whether we'd give that an award for responsible journalism if we were in the position of handing out such an award. Can we have